Hey guys, welcome in. Sean here. It is Unpaid with Sean Salisbury. Colton Ost on Thursday. Trey Wingo next Tuesday. And maybe a special college football surprise tomorrow. We'll get an answer today depending on his schedule, and it'll be a great one. And we will dive in heavy to college football as we head into the weekend and big weekend one. But we're focusing on the NFL today. And listen, you guys know as cuts go through and trades that happen in the NFL, you guys know them as well as I do. Things that happen that, you know, certain guys get cut in their families, it matters. But we're going to talk about the impact of teams and the players that are there and the impact that they make. And you saw the Kenny Pickett trade yesterday. And will there be other quarterbacks moved? We'll see. I mean, what do you do with Anthony Richardson? Do you keep him there and hope that the potential pays off? We're going to get to all that in touch base. I want to talk about not just perceived weaknesses, but even you fans that are listening and watching. What do you think the weakness of your team is? I'm always curious about that because I you know, we all have our own thoughts. As I fix my hoodie, sorry. We all have our own thoughts about what a team's weakness is. And people that are, you know, in that city may think something different than what we see from a distance. And that's why it's cool, because if there's three or four weaknesses, then that you know, people from a distance don't understand. But you watch it close in training camps. Over, I like this part more. Going into training camps, fine. To me, it's kind of a still off season plus guys are trying to make a team. But once the rosters are set, then we can apply on how it's going to matter when the Cowboys play the Eagles in the matchup. And we'll do that all season long as far as what the keys are every single week. But we won't bore you with just straight X's and O's. Got to talk about the psychological aspects that go into it. And I know there's a lot of talk about a team like Washington this year, and rightfully so. But there's also that, well, are we respecting the Philadelphia Eagles enough? We got a lot of stuff we will get into. It's great to be with you here on a Tuesday. Before I get in, and not just weaknesses, but some of the things to look forward to, competitions and stuff as we roll into the season, everybody thinks they're going to be good. Everybody's not going to be good. And some of those teams that have had some great, like Baltimore last year, was very fortunate injury-wise to be pretty healthy all year long. Can that happen again for them? And I think that's something that we'll obviously keep an eye on. That's the case for everybody. But sometimes you go through a season, you're like, damn, we were able to get through a lot of this season and be pretty damn healthy. And that'll be another one that'll end up having a difference, because starting positions in this league are pretty – there's a lot of teams with some really good depth starting positions. At least the Houston Texans thought they were going to have it, and they still do. You know, trading up to get Woody Marks as a rookie, but now with Mixon out 4 to 6 weeks, you're so grateful you went out, and they must have known something with Joe in the offseason, because Joe Mixon and Nick Chubb give me as good a 1-2 punch as there is in the league. Detroit will have an argument, and as good as Barkley and McCaffrey are, their teams that have an argument just because they're number one so freaking good, right? But we're going to dive into all this stuff and get into as much throughout the week. We're not going to get it all in today because we're not going to overload with that, but just things that we need to see, or from your team, or that we're going to see happen, questions and answers to them going into the season. But before we get into football, real quick, the MVP race in the American League, whether it's Tarek Skubal as a pitcher, but that's why they have the Cy Young, he's going to more than likely win that. Although, man, you're getting a Garrett Crochet who's pitched out of his mind. Hunter Brown's been pretty good, but it appears it's Skubal's to losing the Cy Young. But the MVP race, which early in the season looked like it was Judge in a runaway, even though Cal Raleigh was hitting home runs, but he's got 50. What he's doing for that team, and he is a great defensive catcher as well. I'm anxious to see what happens with these three bodies down the stretch, because Detroit's going to win their division, and the Yankees are chasing for a wild card. Seattle's chasing for a wild card. They're a game and a half back with the Yankees, 5.5 or 6 back in their division, but battling for a wild card. And so does it come down to, and, you know, a lot of times we think, okay, in the National League, is it Ohtani running away with it? But Judge, whose batting average has gone up, he's cut down on strikeouts. We know about the home runs, great leadership, team captain, all the expectations, and he's done more than live up to them. So that's the first part of it. And there you see, you're never going to go away from a Bobby Witt Jr., a Jose Ramirez. Ramirez is the most underrated player in the last 30 years in baseball. I'm just telling you, he is. I say it all the time. I mean, he took less to stay in a place. Jose Ramirez, and maybe 30 years for hyperbolic a little bit. I can't remember, and I'm a diehard baseball fan and watch it religiously, even if it's not my team. You know, I'll watch Cleveland play Cincinnati in a game during the season just because I love it. Jose Ramirez is constant and his consistency showing up and playing and contributing are as underrated as it gets. It's phenomenal how good. If he was playing in a bigger market, I don't think he craves the publicity. He just wants to be a good baseball player. There's no more underrated player playing baseball right now than him. And I'm not even sure it's close. So with that in mind, you see the MVP race. Bobby Witt's going to be in a million of these going on. You start to look at the MVP rankings. In my mind, I think Cal Raleigh, considering now it's not fair to Aaron Judge to because of the expectations in New York that are placed on him, for him to be able to continue to be able to do this, and you know that you got to pitch around him if you can, and if you pitch to him, he's crippling you. He's destroying you. Amazing. You see in the National League, obviously. Unfortunately, wins and losses aren't going to be Paul Skene's problem. He's pitched out of his mind. He just has no help. Trey Turner's been outstanding. Pete Crow Armstrong, that young center fielder, can run and hit and do it all. And Schwarber, what he's doing in Philly, you can count on him. The ball's leaving the ballpark, and he is clutch with big stones. And then Ohtani's Ohtani. So you look at it both ways. But just in the race, you start to look at all the stats. Some of them don't mean a hill of beans to me, but in the home run category, 50 for Raleigh, 40 for Judge, 107 RBIs for Raleigh, 93 for Judge, stolen bases, batting average is almost 100 points different, 80 points different, should I say, that Judge is over Raleigh. But the slugging percentage, both of them are high. One's in the high 500s, Raleigh, and Judge is in the high 600s. On base, 353, Judge leads that at 439. They both play a lot of baseball. OPS, Judge is over 1,000 at 1,100 and 949 for Raleigh. So they both have their war at the top of it is enormous. I'm curious to see. It's not going to go to a pitcher. Now, at some point, Skenes and Skubal may win one, but it won't be this year just because Pittsburgh's not very good for Skenes and Skubal's team is. But these other guys would have to have a regular player's not having a great year, an outlier year. Then the pitcher comes in, or if the pitcher's 22-1, right? He'll get it, but that's Cy Young. I think Cal Raleigh leads right now, considering that team, and they needed help at the plate. They went out and got some at the trade deadline, but, man, he's just been consistently great. And to crouch behind home plate and hit 50 home runs and have those expectations on you to continue to drive the ball, now got his team within a game and a half of the Astros. Keep an eye on how that MVP race starts to shape up and how it finishes, because it's not won yet. It is not won yet. My gut tells me, in the National League, it's between Schwarber and Ohtani. Ohtani obviously the lead. And in the American League, unless there's some crazy late push in the National League. And in the American League, it's Judge and it's Cal Raleigh or Cal Raleigh Judge. And the third guy in both categories would have to do something completely different like an out-of-body experience to catch these two. But I don't believe that the MVP award is settled in the American League for sure. All right, let's go through, guys, in the National Football League as we come out of training camp, and you guys know who's been cut, and there'll be waiver wire pickups and the rest of it. But let's just go through, some teams today of something, their weaknesses they go in or perceived weakness and how they're going to fix it and the strength. So we're just kind of comparing who they're going to – we'll get to matchups next week and how that happens as we head into the opener next Thursday with the – Cowboys and the Eagles. And so let's start in the AFC South, which is not everybody. I take that back. Let's start in the AFC East, or the NFC East, excuse me. We got a lot of people in here who love their Eagles and love their Cowboys. The Giants are a lightning rod right now, and there's a question mark for some in that building. And then you obviously have Washington, the Giants, and the Philadelphia Eagles and the Cowboys. So in the division, the Dallas Cowboys, for them to do what they get to, obviously Parsons, I still don't believe Parsons is playing anywhere else. He's not going to get traded. When he gets the contract, who knows? But I believe he's going to suit up and play. He's under contract, and Jerry runs the show. Jerry has the leverage because of the tag next year and that he's under contract. And if you don't show up, you don't get paid. And if you don't get paid, I don't know many guys with the balls to hold out on $1 million paycheck, weekly. Or every 2 weeks, or more than that. I don't know many guys that have the balls to hold out on that, because when push comes to shove, you put the uniform on regardless of how many plays you're going to play if you're out of shape football-wise. But the Dallas Cowboys, to me, the weakness is simple. One is is this team deep enough on offensive line, let alone starters, to take care of their business in a very difficult division? Secondly, for me, is this team good enough running the football, which would they're going to commit to it. They just are. Brian Schottenheimer is going to commit to it. Are they good enough to run the football consistently to take pressure off what Dak doesn't do as well as he used to when he came into the league? And he's no longer a major run threat. He's just not. You can see the winners over the division the last 25 years. He's no longer a major run threat. He's a pocket guy playing off play action, buy a little time, mix that in, but that's not his game anymore. You know, being a little older, taking punishment, plus you don't want to put him in harm's way because right now Joe Milton's not ready to play as a backup. The backup quarterback position throughout the league, there are some that got good ones. The depth of it is bad. It's not a great backup position in this league. It's just not, because people are not investing in that for the most part. And say everybody, some are not investing in that. They're counting on their guy. And then when it hits them in the face, it's like, oh my gosh, we should have. You don't want to be a should, we should have. I mean, the Raiders, whether you think Kenny Pickett's the guy, if something happens to Geno Smith, you go out and get him. At least it gives you a guy who's played and has some experience, which does stand for something. It just does. So the Cowboys, offensive line question for me. And even with Micah Parsons back, the defense, do they have what it takes to really stand up to quarterback play and offensive play that they're going to face this year? I think the Cowboys offense will be better because I think they can throw it. And I know that they're going to try to be physical at the line, but Brian Schottenheimer's philosophy, run it, play defense, play action, mix in the pass. Their best players are a quarterback and a wide receiver with some production from the tight end position. How much production you'll get from the running game and how much prediction you'll get, production you're going to get from the offensive line. I think that's something going in, not only perceived as a real weakness. And until you prove to me defensively that you're physical and that you can, that you're not going to put yourself in trouble, that you can handle a team that can maul you in the run game, the Dallas Cowboys got some fixing to do on defense. And I'm not even sure Micah Parsons, who will take it to a different level for them, I'm not even sure if that'll be enough for this team to be a playoff team, but they will be in the hunt, a battle, because they're good enough offensively to score. But if you make them one-dimensional, things will get – you'll see balls go to places, even though I'm a Prescott fan, you'll see balls thrown to places that shouldn't be thrown there. Philadelphia, I really don't know what the biggest weakness for them is. I don't. I mean, I know that they in their building, they're trying to guard against anything that may be a perceived weakness, but I'll be honest with you, I don't see a major weakness for the Philadelphia Eagles. And for somebody else who might, it's not on my radar. They're physical up front. They've got good depth, and they're physical defensively. They have receivers that can change the game without question. They have a run game that's now as significant as there is. They've got attitude. I guess for me, and Danny Boy, welcome in. We're going to talk about when we get to Trey Hendrickson and that $14 million pay raise, yet he still gets an opportunity to be a free agent at the end of the year. So he gets the upgrade, $30 million a year, is getting paid like the top players and makes them better. But for Philadelphia, maybe, just maybe, and I don't know if this is even real anymore, is how hungry are they going to be? How hungry are they going to be? Yeah, and I understand, Danny Boy, why you would like number 11 on Dallas in Philadelphia or in Cincinnati, one of those places, or should I say in Cincinnati. But I don't think that's going to happen. He's not going anywhere, in my humble opinion. So for Philadelphia, to me, is how hungry are they? And I don't think for a Super Bowl champion that we spend enough time talking about just how good they are. Now, when I say hungry, I'm not questioning if they're dedicated to doing it. Those fans are. I damn well know that. But they definitely, it's different. Off seasons are spent at banquets, writing books, doing endorsements. It is very hard. We see it happen all the time, to be able to compartmentalize and know we're coming back. 2-1's not enough. I want the Philadelphia Eagles to be greedy. Greedy in their preparation, greedy in their time, greedy in their football approach to football, greedy in how they, attack teams. I want them to be greedy. And one shouldn't be enough this team is really, really good, and they are definitely good enough to repeat. And of all the teams in the league, and that's Kansas City included, I know Buffalo is one that everybody's leaning on. I don't see how Philadelphia is still not the overall number one team out of 32 teams in this league until proven different. They're deep. They're physical. They've got playmakers at every position. They can rush the passer. They can stop the run. They are active. They kept their coordinators. Well, they lose, should I say, Kellen Moore, but they've kept their head coach and their defensive coordinator right there in the mix. And now they know what they're trying to accomplish. You've got a quarterback who's clutch in the when it matters, and Jalen Hurts plays his best when it's the circumstances require the most pressure. But he's been doing that all the way through. He did it in college at Alabama, and now he's doing it in the NFL. And you got this guy right here who just completely changes the way you have to defend. Philadelphia should be everybody's number one radar team in the league. They just should be. And if we haven't talked about them enough, shame on us. The Washington Commanders, the Adoniram Tunsil, they get Terry McLaurin, among other things. I think they're extremely well coached by Dan Quinn. They got a play caller in Cliff Kingsbury who will empty the bucket all the time. One weakness is, please, Jaden Daniels, learn how to slide. I know that sounds crazy, but the dude is so good. I don't need him in harm's way, and he takes on stuff that he doesn't need to take on. So that's one for me that absolutely has to be a factor. It just does, to keep him upright. Now, McKee's a really good player, but McKee for Philadelphia, good player in their backup. But when you get to Jaden Daniels, and I'm still stuck on Philadelphia because that's one thing I wanted to make a point. Backup quarterbacks, as we said, I really love what Tanner's done in Philadelphia, and he does give you some confidence that if something were to happen with a physical quarterback like Hurts, you never know. You never know. But with Cliff in Washington, he'll put the ball in Jaden's hands. For me, Jaden Daniels, absolutely, and they're a hot talking topic now. Matter of fact, they're probably the in vogue, talked about, lookout team, and I get it. Are they good enough at the perimeter wide receiver to dominate there when they have to get into a throwing game? We know that they're good. They can run it. They're going to commit to it. And Cliff Kingsbury, he understands how to attack a defense. The whole key is for Jaden Daniels to stay upright. And when you get him on the edge, to use him two-dimensional. But he's got to be smart in his ability to know when to get down. I know that sounds like such a minor thing. It's not. He is no good to me on the sidelines. And he takes a lot of hits because he's tough. But he doesn't need to prove that to anybody else. So for me, they had a taste of it last year. They went in and took care of Detroit, but they got a taste of what it's like if you're running against somebody who's deeper than you and a little more physical than you. And they ran into that in Philadelphia, and that's always a tough task. If Washington wasn't in the division, now there's a couple other tough divisions across the league, but if Washington wasn't in this division and you threw them in the AFC South, the NFC South, they'd be even more over. When people be talking about them as a possible best record in the NFC type thing, because of the division and the competition, Washington's really good. And their quarterback, if there's no sophomore setback, meaning, and I don't think there will be, but it's always happens, not to everybody, but it kicks in sometimes for whatever reason. But they've upgraded their offensive line, and they got the receiver back in. Jaden Daniels is real, and I think this year is another year to do it. Now, the big question here is in the Giants. I don't know if the Giants are a big question and threat, maybe a little underrated. But I really need to know this answer. I wonder who the players want more to start for them, a quarterback. I honestly do, and it does matter. I really wonder if they're sitting here saying, we are just a more dynamic team, if you can call the Giants that right now, with Jackson Dart at quarterback. Now, listen, I don't think Jackson Dart's ready to take this on and dominate it right now, because it was preseason. If we're judging quarterbacks by preseason, we got a hell of a lot of guys that are, ooh, that guy's going to be a Hall of Famer. But that's all we have to judge him on: how he was coached in college, what kind of explosive talent he has. That's never been in question. Underrated feet. The ball comes out, and he has got phenomenal pocket awareness. He just does. It's been one of his strengths. Now, he's got the ability to buy time. The one thing you're asking a guy to slow down in his position is a quarterback in this league. The one thing you're asking to slow down for him is when you get to the NFL, that there's a tendency to speed things up in your own mind where you're not, where you, you bail us a little too soon as a rookie. We all did it. And he's a first round pick. We all did it. One, he's got a strength of making off schedule plays, but his big strength is he is very, very, very cognizant and aware. His pocket ability to move, slide, and get the ball up with his feet on the ground and with his head up is really, really good. Underrated. We don't talk about it enough, but there is this crutch that you start to lean on. And what happens is because of all that, you don't get the same complex defenses in college as you do in the NFL. You'll get some complex athletes that are damn good, and you're playing Georgia. Kirby Smart's going to give you different looks, but they don't play as many coverages. They just don't. And in a lot of times in college, you're looking, snapping your head over to the sideline. Coach is calling it right up until the, you know, he can't talk to you anymore, but they can keep sending hand signals in, and he's kind of directing you where to throw the football. In the NFL, that's not usually how we do it. You actually huddle up, and you get in and out, and you play under center, and you play in the gun, and you're in control along with your center what goes on at the line of scrimmage. But it's just natural. And it's not a bad thing. It's just natural. Boom, first time, bam, head to the – we saw it with some of the other rookies. Head goes right to the pass rush. But his strength is he's really good at manipulation and pocket presence. The question is for the Giants, is Jackson Dart, is he better for them? Look at the – I'm not comparing him to Jaden Daniels or C.J. Stroud talent-wise yet. Now, he's a dynamic player like they are, but I'm not going to say he's going to have the same rookie year as both of them. But I can tell you this, first of all, that room right there, that's the deepest quarterback room in the NFL. The problem is the starter's not the best. We don't know if the they got three potential guys who can start. Two have started a lot of football, one who's going to start a lot of football, and two that got more experience. Now, as far as top heavy, there's plenty of teams that are better at the top. But when you get to two and three, if Dart's three and Winston's two and Wilson's one, you're pretty damn deep. If Wilson's two, Dart's one, and Winston's three, well, damn, that's a deep one. If Winston's two, Dart's one, and Wilson's third, deep. That's the deepest depth-wise. It's not the best at the top, but it is the deepest quarterback room for experience. And they're waving Tommy DeVito, and that's no surprise because the other three guys are better. Now, maybe somebody Tommy picks up Tommy, but they're better. Deep room. But to me, it's one of the five big questions is trust. Not that you don't trust Russ. Russ has been a long time. But we've seen now is his best football behind him. And if you're Brian Daboll and the way you'd make this decision and the way you're going about it, are you thinking to yourself, you know what? It's a short leash, or this guy's going to start. Here's what we're going to do, short leash for the starter. And then when we go with Jackson Dart, because when you make the commitment to go with Jackson Dart, if you bring him off the bench, I don't think you're turning back. I think you're going to let it rip and just empty the bucket. This is a huge year for the Giants staff. So that's why this decision's odd, because you're going to say, who gives you the best chance not only to win, but to get a new contract, to keep your job for next year? I just have the questions of leadership, and there's just a different feel. I saw it with Jaden Daniels. I saw it with C.J. Stroud here in Houston. You've seen it with guys that they just elevate somebody else. Is it real leadership? Is it fake leadership? Or you happen to beg for guys to follow you as opposed to they follow you because you're just showing them and they're magnetized to you. I've seen it with young players coming to buildings I've been coming in. They're just something different. Jackson Dart feels like he has that. Now, playing in New York, tough on you, tough division. He'll go through even if he does play. My suggestion is they're probably going to start with Russ Wilson, but if it's bad, we've said on this show, I don't think it lasts long. But I'm going to tell you, the question is I ask you Giants fans, are you better with Jackson Dart? Rookie, and we're past the point of if a rookie's really, really good. I'm not just talking about preseason, but in the meeting rooms and practice and everything he's doing. Do the coaches, when they see it, they say, you know what? If a rookie and a veteran are playing the same, that the veteran's making rookie mistakes, or you're looking and saying, well, man, they're pretty equal. Why wouldn't you play the rookie? And please don't give me what if the starter loses confidence? The young rookie loses confidence because he threw a couple picks. Well, then Bryce Young would be out of the league. John Elway would have never made it. Troy Aikman would have quit, but none of them did. They all had their struggles. Everybody, Marino didn't. Well, Marino was cut from a different cloth than the rest of the normal mere mortals when it comes to throwing a football. But I don't ever want to hear, because the second you tell me that my quarterback's got a fragile personality. I'm not saying they're saying that in New York, but when you tell me that you're concerned about a fragile quarterback's confidence, then I'll tell you this, that I'm concerned that he'll be any good at any point in time. I don't want fragile at that position. And you sure as hell don't want your teammates to think it's fragile. I think this is a really unique situation for a team that's not a Super Bowl threat, that they're trying to keep jobs, but they're better than we think they are. The question is, are they better with Jackson Dart? Are they better with Russ Wilson? I don't think we're thinking that Jameis is going to start, but I love him, want him as a teammate. Jameis Winston probably gives you, if not the best, he's not third or fourth as far as backups go in this league, who can start. Jameis is that guy. Plus, teammates love it. And that's important. The question is, in quiet, private time, if you talk in that locker room, I want to know, who do you think the Giants players want more under center? Question to ponder. In the AFC East, the weaknesses, I mean, what's Buffalo's weakness? That they, you know, they can run the football. Is it explosive perimeter wideouts? Is that, do we're putting too much on Josh Allen? Is that the weakness? And the weakness that we're still going all these years and they're carrying the burden around, the best to never win it, right? They're carrying the Phil Mickelson before he won a major, the Tommy Fleetwood before he got his first victory. They're, and in bigger fashion, because this is football. It's the National Football League. They've got a guy who can shoulder it. I promise you that. You can throw a diesel on back of him and he can carry it. But there's this Buffalo team. Could I see Buffalo and Washington surviving? Sure. Could I see Buffalo and Philly in the Super Bowl? You're damn right. Can I see Kansas City and Washington? I do. These teams were mentioned. The AFC East and the NFC East, there's a real good chance that you could grab a representative out of both to be your Super Bowl representatives. I don't think it's far-fetched. Buffalo has also been – and Buffalo's been – you know, I think about baseball, like Toronto and Baltimore until this last year and a half. Baltimore, you know, that team that, man, with the, they're right on the verge, man. They're close. They keep getting close. They're right on the verge. And, oh, didn't quite get there. Toronto, think about Toronto baseball, Toronto Blue Jays. Now they're back in first place, but for 3 or 4 years, every year, somebody picked them. I know I did, to pick them to win the American League. Nope. And you start to look at the talent and the power and, you know, all up and down from Guerrero to Springer. And now they're back in first place. But who are they? And I think the Buffalo Bills, not saying Toronto and Buffalo, but they're similar because, and they're also close, is it? Buffalo's a pick that I'm trying that I may have to pick them to get the Super Bowl as well because they're quarterback. But are you putting too much on him? Imagine what happens if he misses a game or two. Are you equipped? That dude right now, quarterbacks mean as much to their team as anybody I know, but there can be nobody that means more to their team. Maybe Lamar in Baltimore, Mahomes. But in truth, does anybody with the burden they're carrying mean more to their team than him? Buffalo's a definite threat. For me, it just may be the pressure of the burden of, can you make a 4-foot putt when you got a 1-stroke lead? And or Tommy Fleetwood, and he finally did it. Is this Buffalo's year? Are they the FedEx Cup champions this year? Like that's a burden. I'm telling you, that burden to carry around is tough because then you win one, you lose one, and all of a sudden people say, oh, you got beaten. So I'm curious about that. But I can tell you this, you put the ball in Allen's hands and another guy that is, he's just built different, man. And his accuracy from the time he came into the league until now, he's been well coached and he is bought into it. And he still plays like a blue collar guy, which I admire. Miami, keeping Tua healthy. The whole thing comes down to me. Is this a pillow fight team or is this a punch you in the face team and punch you in the gut team? I know the answer to the second one. They're not. But for them to go with it, finesse teams don't win, man, championships. They just don't. They'll wow you. They're fun to watch. It's like Big 12 football a couple of years ago. Everybody's throwing it all over the lot, 60, you know, throwing it 40, 50 times, points. You're down 21 with 3 minutes to go, and the combined score in the last 4 minutes, 42 points. Both teams score. They weren't defending anybody. But, damn, you know, unless at one point West Virginia played a little defense, Oklahoma State played a little defense. There's some who did, but for the most part, if you couldn't score, you couldn't win. And if you were down 3 touchdowns with 4 minutes to go, you could make it happen. Without a doubt. Miami, Miami's Big 12 team. Score. I'm talking about Big 12 in 2021. Okay. That's what I'm the Big 12. That guy can throw it as long as he's in rhythm. He's physically limited on pocket breaking, throw the ball down the field. You keep him in rhythm and they're throwing slants and flats and curls and bang posts on time. His physical skills, while his arm's not a howitzer arm, it's enough, but he has to be on time. They're not a great off schedule team. Now, somebody may come back and say, Sean, they made five plays over 30 yards off schedule. Right. But see that number up there? Passer rating, most 100 plus. There's a big reason why. When they're in rhythm and scoring, they are. And that finesse team does it. They are finesse to death. The question is, when's the next level of physicality coming for them? Because if not, they will disappear in December. They may win a game or two. So I'm anxious. And like I said, I keep waiting on it. And I think a lot of us do. What's the personality of the Miami Dolphins? For me, that is the weakness. Now, obviously, you can say, well, this play, we don't have the backup right guard. All that stuff that you guys local that I, quite frankly, sitting here, don't care who the third string tight end is. I'll care when he gets into the game, makes an impact. But for me, I need to know, can you handle the line of scrimmage in a, quite frankly, a division that there's Buffalo, you got obviously Miami, and you got the Jets, and then you got New England. The question is, how physical are the other three teams going to be? We know Buffalo's going to knock you right in the mouth, and they got a quarterback who will do the same. Tua in rhythm when they're scoring. I've said it before. I'll say it again. Miami reminds me of my USC Trojans. Play caller can get you in the end zone, understands the run game. Mike McDaniel is a really smart guy. I don't know if he's got what it's going to take to be a head coach to get him to another level. We'll see if that attitude parts change for them. Because if you practice finesse and you think finesse, you'll end up being finesse. My Trojans, until they're physical again, playing in a Big Ten, they'll just get pushed around and shoved around. They're going to beat somebody they're not supposed to or they're dogs with, and then they're going to let a team hang around that shouldn't has no business hanging around. It'll all be on defense for them. Are they physical? The Miami Dolphins are the USC Trojans, so we'll see. The Jets, who the hell knows, man? I think that their rosters, they've got some gifted offensive players. The question there is, what's the quarterback position going to do? Who is Justin Fields? Where are they going to go with this? Is Justin Fields a dynamic Ohio State quarterback with all that flash and using those legs? Has he elevated to beating you from the pocket, throwing the football before he has to run first? Has he understood the concept now in this system, another system, what is third in the last 3 years? And it's another different one as a concept of under, and it's hard on a young player, but the concept of that crutch that you don't have to rely on running, use that as your bonus, as your check down, and implement it in the passing game to where you get in the run game where you get him on the edge, use his great skill set. But where is he in this? Where is he? And to me, now there's other things, but I think, you know, I think Aaron Glenn's a good ad. I do. I think there's a different attitude change to them, and I think they're going to do it right. But you guys know in this league, especially in that part of the country, where it gets down to you got to be able to elevate and the quarterback, because there's going to be games when you're 6 out of 22 throwing it. What are you doing? Can you elevate and get your team to win? And maybe that's when Fields will be at his best, when he can implement a little bit more of relying on what he does best. My thing is where's the level? Because I know they got some people that can catch it. I know they got people who can run it. The key for me is, and they'll play better defense because Aaron Glenn knows defense. They will get after you with the pass rush. They're really good. They're going to get some people. They'll do some things. When I say really good, they've got some players. This isn't just an empty cupboard. The key is under center. Who will Justin Fields be? Now, finally, I think one of the wild cards in the division is our guy Mike Vrabel and his New England team. I don't know. There'll probably be a team or two in each conference. You say, I'm not real sure what we're getting out of it. When I get to the NFC, the NFC West, while the 49ers and New England are not comparable, don't misunderstand me. But every year, I think 49ers, there's something going on. And while they're always a playoff Super Bowl talk about team, I'm trying to figure out where they are at the next level this year with injuries and changes and there's a defense element. Are they going to have enough players on the field to do this? Wide receiver, you know, contracts and depth and health and McCaffrey and implementing him. And now Brock Purdy, now it's time. He's shown great stuff early on. I'll get to them in a second, but you start to see why I'm looking at teams that I just don't, I'm not sure, are they a 9-win team or are they a 12-win team? I'll get to San Francisco, but back to New England. I do think Drake May is a really good player, guys. I do. And I think there's one thing that they have lacked since Bill's gone, and it even started to wane a little bit at the end, is, well, now with Tom gone, you've got a quarterback that's far more talented than Mac Jones was. You do. He's a far more gifted thrower of the football than Mac Jones was. But it's not just about that. One thing I know that Vrabel will bring is and listen, whether you like what happened with the previous coaching staff and since Bill's been gone in the last couple of years, whether you like what's it been a year and a half, 2 years now. So if you didn't like the way they got things going there, there will be accountability here. There will be. And you know, you heard the stories of accountability and players and coaches, and they made the switch quickly. What was it? One and done. So with Gerard Mayo. So now you say, okay, they're bringing in a guy who sat out as a head coach last year that most of us didn't think that the Titans should have let him go because he was playing with, quite frankly, a half-empty cupboard. He's got a quarterback, and there will be a tougher football team. They are going to be a tougher football team with a different attitude. I don't think they have the horses to make the playoffs. Matter of fact, I'd be willing to I'll take a futures bet on that one this year. But I do think they're going to be improved. And if they buy into Mike's approach and the quarterback elevates, the key for me has been in the last couple of years, when you go around the country, say, give me the New England Patriots perimeter people and their threats on offense, you would have looked around and said, well, now with Diggs, they're getting better there. And it all stems from the guy under center. And I think he'll get it to another level because we've seen guys like, you know, the Bo Nixes and C.J. Strouds take it to another level. Second-year guy, first-year guy. I'm talking about guys that have been in the league 2 or 3 years. I think Drake May is going to have that opportunity to do that. And it's the Mike Vrabel effect on the and the impact that he'll have on them that is going to matter a great deal to their growth. And I think it's extremely, extremely important. So what is this, a 6-7-win team? Because you think, well, the Jets, Miami, they'll go to and from. They'll have trouble against Buffalo. But they, in the past, have played Buffalo pretty tough at times. We've seen that when Bill was there. All that stuff. This is a new, obviously, era. And you've got a coach that's familiar. But Mike Vrabel can coach his ass off. But if he doesn't have the proper groceries, then it won't matter. But at quarterback, he does. And I still don't think people are fully bought into Drake May nationally yet. I think some are. But you can see enough evidence to say, okay, this is the best quarterback we've had in the building since Brady left. And I don't think there's any doubt about that. So there in the East, you start to see about, okay, weaknesses. Let's get to the AFC and NFC South. Starting with the NFC South, I'll go to Atlanta. This is kind of a team that we're waiting for their offense to get to another level, right? Am I right about that? They've got they can run the football. And I'm also waiting a guy that I don't want to say I've missed on him yet, but who I'm waiting to explode is Pitts has got to get to another level, right? They've got to get to a point where their perimeter people live up to what we expected. I think about a team like Detroit when we saw them make changes to bring in Amon-Ra St. Brown and add to it. They have elevated, and Ben Johnson was a lot to do with that. So offensively, can this team get to a point where, and Michael Penix is a great mid-level thrower that can push the ball down the field. He really is. But that's a guy that I said when he came out, if I was picking a guy, one year I picked Quentin Nelson. You know, guys that come into the league, you say, you can't miss on that. There's no way this guy's as close to a can't miss as there is, right? What's he going to do? How are they going to get him involved among the rest? So for me, it's a second-year quarterback who can push it down the field, a veteran sitting on the bench. Is that any distraction in Cousins? Are you going to utilize him for an asset somewhere else? Are you going to protect it because you need him just in case? But this young fella here, when you didn't need a quarterback, you didn't think last year, you still drafted one. That ought to tell you how they felt about him. But I need more explosiveness from the Atlanta Falcons. I do. And I think that they are primed to get us to that level. And that's a winnable division. It's a winnable division because you look at the, I think the favorite for me, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And speaking of a guy who's not getting enough credit, the way he's continued to stay the course and he's just been low key and done his job as Baker Mayfield. I really am impressed with his elevation there. And they're making changes. They got a backup quarterback. Kyle Trask has been beat out as a backup quarterback. I mean, for the starting job by three different guys. They got rid of him, waived him, and brought in Teddy Bridgewater, who had been coaching high school football as of late. They're trying to secure the fact that if anything happens to that guy, who has put up numbers, and it seems like every year his impact on a team that needs it, his leadership and his and kind of MVP caliber leader and the growth he's made, give Atlanta a chance. And for me, that, you know, when we saw it, not Atlanta, but Tampa Bay, when we saw Tampa at their best when they won that Super Bowl with Brady and their receivers, now they've got veteran wide receivers that know how to get open and deal with it. And to talk about underrated, Mike Evans is the most underrated receiver of all time, okay? But unfortunately, we're using that word a lot today. He is. Mike Evans just keeps going on and keeps chalking him up. So they've got some cagey veterans that can get it done. And for all the lack of energy we saw or the calmness or casualness that you see from Todd Bowles, those guys believe in him. And Baker Mayfield has really added a new punch of energy to that franchise. And they're protected now with a veteran in Teddy Bridgewater if something were to happen. This is another team. The NFC South's a weird division. The NFC South's a weird division. A second-year quarterback in Penix that you think can elevate, but that offense still needs there's another level of high gear for them that I still don't think they've hit enough. You take a look at Tampa Bay, which they can score, and Mayfield will throw for 4,000 yards, and he'll have great energy for them, just, you know, self-inflicted wounds, beating themselves. There's not a whole lot that I would favor them in the division, because they've got the best quarterback in the division as well. And then you talk about Carolina. If there's question marks on who's you're playing the not just whack-a-mole, or you're playing the ball game, you know, the shell game, who is it? You've got Spencer Rattler and that with Shook going to their battle. And then you've got Michael Penix trying to elevate with Kirk Cousins sitting over there, you know, ready to warm up if necessary. The only solid, secure, I'm talking about that has a chance to dominate a quarterback right now, that's secure there is Baker Mayfield. Yet I still think that Bryce Young's got another level. They've improved offensive line immensely. They are better on the outside. And Bryce Young, I think, being kicked in the teeth as a rookie, I believe that Bryce Young being kicked in the teeth as a rookie and not wilting showed me something. That goes back to the fragility of, well, why are we afraid? Like, if in New York they decide to go to Jackson Dart, don't be afraid of that. Jackson Dart's tough enough to handle this. He got, you know, didn't like what happened at USC, beat out, transferred to Ole Miss. He understands that. He hadn't been in a national championship game. He gets drafted by the Giants. He knows what competition is. Don't worry about him losing confidence. We start same here. When Andy Dalton started in front of him, people thought bust. We were already calling him a bust halfway through his first season. And he comes back, and Canales has done a good job. Canales has revitalized quarterback careers and coached their ass off where he's been. He's done a hell of a job of doing that. Here's another one. Now, do they have enough? I think they're fortunate to be in the NFC South, because I don't think it's a wow factor. I don't believe for one second the Super Bowl representatives coming out of there. I don't think there's a chance in hell yet. Tampa Bay is going to want to argue with me. Atlanta's going to tell you they're going to another level. Get to 10 wins, and to me, you probably win that division, because I think I'm not sure who's going to sweep who in the division. And I think that's a big issue. But I can tell you this, for all of you, shame on any of us that questioned if Bryce Young was going to start the comeback, if it was going to wilt him and crush him, what happened to him as a rookie and got benched. No, I actually think it's kind of a good thing, because he'd never been uncomfortable in high school, in college, dominate, do your thing. And he was uncomfortable, and he had to come back from it. And the quarterback position is always about getting comfortable being uncomfortable, because that's what the core of the position is. The only comfort you get from it is, even if you throw a touchdown pass, got to come back out and do it again, the kneel down. Okay. And then finally, for the NFC, for this, and we'll get, you know, the other conferences tomorrow as well, is, you tell me, is the Super Bowl rep coming out of the NFC West or the AFC West? We're going to get to the AFC South, but just, I want you to give me a thought for that as we move ahead throughout this week and into the to next week and next Thursday. There's a really good chance, and I know the Chiefs, but I'm talking about, it's not named the Chiefs. It's not named the Chiefs. Is there a possibility as we look out west in the NFC and AFC, but the AFC South, as we close up today for you, is, you want to talk about a lot going on. Joe Mixon now is out 4 to 6 weeks. The best 1-2 punch not named Detroit in the league at running back was them. And now with Joe Mixon out 4 to 6 weeks and never knowing how long it's going to last, then what? Then what? Joe Mixon going to last. Oh, I just got a little message. That I think, are they engaged? Travis Kelce, and we'll get to that tomorrow. I'm not going to – Taylor Swift doesn't get to disrupt this show with a ring on her finger. We're talking sports right now. Although maybe being engaged is going to elevate even Kelce to even another level. That'll be fun conversation to have. But I can tell you, back to this, the Joe Mixon injury sets him back a little bit because, I remember John – God rest John Clayton's soul, the best in the world, and one of my dearest friends, and those were epic. And I don't think they've been repeated because John and I did it the right way. That's for another day. But we'll give John his flowers again this fall over what he did. He's one of my very dearest friends. He was, and I miss him dearly every day. So with the Texans, who are clearly the best team in this division, I don't care what anybody says, clearly. But there's a couple things now that creep in. Remember, no Tank Dell. You're no Tank Dell. Why am I losing my mind? Oh, no Stephon Diggs, because he's gone. You got Christian Kirk, and you got a couple of veterans. John Mechie was obviously shipped to Philadelphia. You've got a couple of rookie wide receivers that, you know, Berrios is a part of the return game and can play some slot for you too. You've got the big fella in Nico Collins. But without Joe Mixon and coming off an injury in Nick Chubb, who, if he's right, is a beast. And then you traded up for Marks from the Southern Cal, and you've got Damian Pierce there. What would look like a physical power running game, you're one injury away from playing a rookie or a guy who's can't carry the ball 25 times a game, 30 times, never has, in Damian Pierce. So what looked, that's why I always wait till the end of training camp to start giving predictions in that. I think that for all along, I've been saying the Texans are the best roster. But look how quickly it can shift. Now the reliability goes on Nick Chubb, coming off an injury, was deposited out of Cleveland. So there's hunger there for him too. If he's fully healthy and runs, he'll carry it 25 times because they want to run it here, because it's that Kyle Shanahan. I'm just telling you, they want to do the same things that you see the teams, McDaniel, even though a lot of these teams still, they want to run it first. You just got to have the personnel to do it and to be physical enough at the point of attack. But the Texans do have some weaknesses. How efficient will they be at wide receiver without Nico? I mean, next to Nico Collins, that's one. Two, how long will you have to deal with the Joe Mixon thing, and can Nick Chubb carry the burden? Three is they're going to start Urse Reed at left tackle as a rookie starter, and you bring in Robinson in the offseason, already preparing that they may trade him. Brown, I believe, got cut today. As cuts continue to happen throughout the day, what, up until 3 o'clock Central or something? You start to think about it now. What was a weakness and a detriment to the Texans last year is still that right now. It's a perceived weakness. I believe they can't play worse. They'll never be as bad as they were on pre-snap penalties in Houston as they were last year, with time after time after time. They put themselves in long yardage, which then takes the coordinator out of a normal game plan, puts pressure on the quarterback to force stuff that he doesn't want to force, which at times Stroud did last year and wasn't the same, and missed throws that he had normally missed. So it's a collateral damage and a domino effect that crushes you. I've said all along, for every team, if your offensive line can't control the line of scrimmage, I don't care how good Stroud is. It will not matter. Oh, they may win the division, win a playoff game. They ain't playing in February if that doesn't become a strength of the team. And right now, the offensive side of the ball has the weakness. Now Joe Mixon, depth. Now, offensive line, a rookie at left tackle, coming off a team that got a new offensive coordinator and a new offensive line coach that was promoted within because they weren't any good there. Have they gotten better? And the tight end depth now has been, there's been a couple injuries. Irv Smith, we've already seen injuries befell them already with Jordan. And now you've got to say it's Dalton Schultz going to another level, right? Don't know. And you can't say, oh, they're definitely going to be better because that offensive line's been mix and match. Are they finally in their positions, their secure positions where they can protect the quarterback? Because playing on your ass is hard enough. For some of us, it's hard enough to play in the pocket when you're clean, let alone when you're on your ass. And while Davis Mills is a formidable backup, you don't want that. So who are they going to be up front? On defense, find me a weakness. You find me one. They can run, and they're nasty at linebacker. They're better up front. They can disrupt. They got a bookend edge rushers. They're deep on defense. Their secondary is really friggin' good. Best young secondary in football, in my opinion. So there's no weak. Coaching staff strong. Head coach, great leader. No weakness there. It's on offense. And think about it. An offense with Nico Collins and C.J. Stroud and Christian Kirk and Nick Chubb. Now you've got a question of, okay, who are they? And there's a group of those guys that I will be shocked if they're not a top five defense in this league this year. Now, that comes back to, is the offensive line going to hold up well enough for them to keep those guys right there off the field? The advantage is, like the NFC South, this AFC South, those are the two weakest divisions in football. That doesn't mean there's not good players and got some good teams. There's no great team in either one right now. Now, the Texans are pretty close to being to elevating to another level because they've won the division the last 2 years, even with a subpar offensive line. Now they've elevated in a lot of places and they're deep. So you look to the other teams in the division. Jacksonville, new coach, the questions of Trevor Lawrence and their offensive line. And I was looking through some. I was trying to go through some of this NFL news today about some of the weaknesses of teams that other people thought about them. And we can get to that later. But for me, that, you know, you've got to run it and you got to throw it. But it comes down to, we have overrated this team and franchise for a minute. We have. And while I don't always like to make it a focus on the quarterback, which I try not to, but how can you not? If I said to you guys right now and anybody in the comments, is Trevor Lawrence a bust, a tweener, or a star? Paid like a star, performs like a tweener, is not a full-blown bust. And you say, well, Sean, how can you say him bust? He's played pretty well. I had him as a guy who was going to be a star 2 years ago when you said, okay, he's ready to take the next level. They didn't take it last year, and neither did he. But he's got so much ability. You're saying, what's holding him back? You had Doug Peterson. So you start to ask, well, who is it? Guy who's coached the Super Bowl. Now you got another offensive coach who's there to prime and get the most out of Trevor Lawrence. We have not got the most out of Trevor Lawrence yet. We just haven't. Not the guy that we all saw coming out. Now, am I willing to tell you I'm quitting on him? Absolutely not. But I can tell you this, that the talk's going to grow louder if this team's average this year because the quarterback. If that's the case, now, help, health, protection, all those things that go with it. I get it. I know how hard it is. But you cannot tell me these years into his career as the first pick of the draft that Trevor Lawrence has lived up to your expectations. There's been flashes of more than just living up to the expectations. You look at it, and I think that's the teaser. That's the thing, that's the pisser. When you watch him make these throws and these decisions, when he makes some good throws, you're like, damn, that's the guy that's going to be a star. But then he'll make some stuff, and you're like, what in the world are you thinking? And unfortunately, we're past that now with him. I know another new coach. I understand. What's that for him now? What are we at, 3 or 4 new head coaches? We've been through, what, Urban Meyer briefly. Been through, Doug Peterson. Been through now you're at Liam Cohen. I mean, 3 or 4, and that's a lot of coaching changes on staff. I get it. But great quarterbacks change that room. Not this, that room changes them. Great quarterbacks take coordinators and make them better. It's not just the coordinator. Quite frankly, it's usually the opposite. John Elway could have made me coordinate well. Not saying taking anything away from the guys who are coaching. You get my point that they make your job a lot easier because they keep you out of a lot of horse shit calls and make something happen. Trevor Lawrence has got to do that. The ability says yes. The performance says sometimes. The first pick of the draft says not enough. Important. The other two teams, they're probably like me. Cam Ward, the one thing that I know he's got is that offensive line's pretty damn good. For a rookie quarterback, you're begging for that, especially on a team that was the last pick. I mean, the last, and they got to pick him first. For that team, you're saying, okay, what do we got to start with for this guy? So we'll at least give him a chance. They've got that. I think it's a very important year for their coaching staff, and you're putting it in a rookie's hands. And I really do think Cam Ward, he should have been the first pick of the draft. Now he's going to have to go out. He's going to go through some really growing pains, and you Tennessee Titans fans, be prepared. He's going to get punched in the face a bunch. But whenever every time I hear him talk, I know that they got the right guy. Now, does that mean he's going to have a great career? I don't know. But going in, they got the right guy. Now you got to have players, and you got to have health, all those things. I really honestly believe that the attitude and the leadership, I have no problem throwing him in. Once again, back to a rookie who says, is he ready? Probably not. Is he doing it, going about it the right way mentally and emotionally? Absolutely. When I hear him talk now, he's going to go out and make plays. Listen, when you're that good, you at times you're just better than the other dude, and they got to take the L. The question is a team, we always say, well, the team's not good. The quarterback must not be very good. That's not fair. I think they'll surprise some people this year. I don't think they're a threat to win the division. I know some people out there do. Now, they're a threat if the Tennessee Titans or if the Houston Texans decide to miss the team bus. And they're going to give you some go. This looks like a team that will disrupt the playoff picture but not be in it. And that guy right there, I think, has got a real chance because I love the way he sets the tone. And what happens when you get a guy, even as a rookie, that walks into a building, and when everybody else is doing one thing, he's staring at tape because he said, I think he was made the comment about his dad getting up early and going to work in a job he did not like, that how in the world is he not going to wake up early and do a job he loves? That's right, and I don't think he's just saying it for those reasons. Plus, he's played. Here's an advantage going in, Titans fans. He's played a lot of football. Played a lot. What was it? Incarnate Word, Washington State. Was he? Did he start at Incarnate Word? Did he play at Incarnate Word? Was it him? I believe at least three universities, and then obviously Miami. The one thing that he'll have to guard against because he was hero ball in college is knew that he had to make plays and threw him into a little bit of trouble. Got a little. Try to play unconscious football and then would throw you back into it late. If he can guard against being too much hero, Tennessee has something. And keep him protected, but you're going to have to do some other things because you don't want to put the burden on a rookie quarterback to have to elevate to a point. See, Washington with Jaden Daniels had good players. C.J. Stroud had good players as a rookie. Bo Nix has good players. He had them as a rookie. So those guys. But I Cam Ward's just kind of plodding along because not people are talking about Tennessee. Now the Colts, what a weird situation. Good wide receiver room. We'll see about the offensive line. Find out about the defensive front and if that's a strength for them. They've upgraded the back end, which is going to be necessary. And for me, where's the help come? Can Jonathan Taylor, the depth in the running back room? That's that. And then the big question, Sat, isn't it amazing that the teams that are in flux for the most part, unless they're willing to take the next, they're about to take the next step, the teams that are in flux, isn't it amazing how it usually comes down to what guy's under center? Because with the Colts, Daniel Jones is going to start. They are, they've got some things that they got to do. They're saying all the right things. That Anthony Richardson and Daniel Jones should start. He gives them the best chance to win. But that can't be a long leash, right? 1 year contract, what, $15 million? So it's not like you're sold out for $35 million on a guy. He's been in a playoff game. He's a couple of them, I think. What, they beat Minnesota, and then they got beat by Philly when he was in with the Giants. But and he's got good feet, more accurate than Anthony Richardson. But that position, you talk about fragile and depth. Goodness gracious, if Daniel Jones were to play poorly and piss down his leg, are you convinced that Richardson's going to come in and set the world on fire? Maybe he does what Bryce Young does. It benched again, let me get back in there, and I'm ready for this now. And then the energy goes, you know, through the roof. But he's going to have to be more accurate when he comes back. And when you're that physically gifted, patience isn't a thing. You always rely on your strength, and that's to just be physically better than everybody. But sometimes the physical guy doesn't always win the job, and he didn't win this job. They don't trust him to be the starter right now. And that's exactly why, because when you're, I don't say bailing, but when you're, when you went out and got a guy who's had his own troubles and you brought him in and he started and he is your guy and you're putting everything on him. And then you got Anthony Richardson, who just 3 years ago you drafted with the fourth pick of the draft. That's a burden for Daniel Jones, but it's also an admittance that says, if Daniel Jones plays great, you may end up trading him to a team that's looking for a prospect, meaning a guy with a lot of gifts that needs to be coached somewhere else that may need to change the scenery. But in truth, guys, if they all play their best in the division, see, when you go through and say, well, if Kansas City, the Chargers, and Denver play their best, can Denver and Kansas City, can the Chargers hang in? You're damn right they can, because their rosters are, talent-wise, they're on par. In this division, if the Colts, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the Titans play their best, and the Texans, this to me, you're playing for second place. Not that the Texans are better than everybody else in the league, but the division-wise, they're supremely gifted. But we know the weaknesses that I pointed out. So that gives you, two of the divisions in each. We'll get two more. We'll get the AFC West, NFC West, and then the North in both. Tomorrow we roll on. We'll talk a lot of college football as we got huge games coming up with Ohio State, and try to bring somebody in from Ohio State and UT to talk about that matchup, possibly LSU and Clemson if we can get that, but also one overall college guest if we can to break it all down for us. We have Ryder Cup captains coming out. For those of you who love golf like I do, Keegan Bradley, I think he's going to name himself. For me, it'd be Burns, Cantlay, whether he's a slow player or not, Burns and Cantlay. Morikawa has played poorly, but he's still like the sixth-ranked player in the world. Keegan Bradley, I said Sam Burns. Who am I leaving out? Patrick Cantlay. Ben Griffin's earned it. Justin Thomas is going to make it. Ben Griffin has earned it with his play this year. I think he's going to get left off. I think it's going to be Bradley, Cantlay, unless it's been announced. If it's been announced since I've been on here, then fine. But I think it's tomorrow's the deadline, or is it today? But Keegan Bradley, I believe, is going to name himself. Patrick Cantlay, he's played really good golf this year, even though he slow plays it. Justin Thomas, Colin Morikawa, question mark, because he hasn't played well, but he's high enough in that you got to put him on the team, I think. And then Sam Burns, who's one of the best putters in the world. And who'd I leave off in that group? Somebody that's obvious. Cantlay, Morikawa, Keegan Bradley, Sam Burns, Justin Thomas, and I'm leaving somebody else. Goddard, who's like 20th in the points, but is long. You got to have somebody long. It's going to be interesting. I believe Keegan Bradley, and I think that a guy like Ben Griffin, who believes that we believe he should be on, he may not. Now, I may be saying this, and it may have already been said, but I don't see where the Ryder Cup team's been announced fully. I do believe Keegan Bradley is going to play, which puts a lot of emphasis on being able to focus on both and having a strong captain, assistant captains as well. He's just playing too well to leave him off. And this matters on your home soil at Bethpage Black. So much more football. Deep dive into college football as we work through and get studio done to be able to telestrate stuff for you with all these guests. And coming down the pike as we work, as you've heard JB with his show and his mother and health and the rest of it, I'm going to give him a time to do focus on his life and get it going. And he does great stuff on his show, and I love JB. He'll join us every Monday. But with guests, and I'll have another part of a co-host coming down the pipe that you want to see a show flipped on its edge with him and I together, and the chemistry, just like JB and I have great chemistry, to where we're adding great music and great guests and the rest of it, but all of it comes together. But one thing we'll never lack is our authentic approach to sports, and now football kicks in, and you'll get it real. Hell, I want to get to the point that we can get you guys calling in like Feinbaum Show and get you right there to where I can hear your voice instead of just have to read it. I promise it's coming, and I promise we're aiming towards being the most powerful and best sports podcast. And I sincerely mean it. It's not hyperbole. I know what we bring. If you want it this way, if you want it right, if you're looking for throw shit against the wall and hope it sticks, this ain't the place for you. But if you're looking for passion and real you're going to get it here, not only with guests that are going to, I'm going to get out of them what's maximized to get out of them. And then you're going to see it get to another whole level. And I can't wait. I've been waiting for football to elevate. You can now get us on, we're up going on iTunes, Apple, and Spotify, along with YouTube. You can catch it on X, on Twitter, and you can get all our stuff on TikTok, everywhere. So now we have elevated to that, so we can go, and there will be no apology. You're exactly right, Lucy. We're going to do it the right way, the way that, well, I think you deserve sports. I'm tired of the politics and all that. It's a beatdown. Now we're into game planning and get after it, and I love your guys' energy, and I'm going to bring the same thing to you every day with help from friends, but this is going to elevate to the point where I'd like it to be can't miss viewing. Hopefully it already is, but now it's time. Baseball's rolling in, and we get the best of the best when it comes to football. Matter of fact, 5 days a week wouldn't be enough when it comes to the information we're going to give you and to get it all right here. We'll see you guys tomorrow right here on Unpaved. If the schedule permits, we'll have a great college football guest, as good as there is in the country. We'll talk to you tomorrow right here on Unpaved. For Triple E and Laura, I'm Sean. We'll see you guys tomorrow.